Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome man. He's a little boy and all of his dreams have finally come true. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Welcome to the show. It's Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. But I was talking to the porn actor Jean Valjean last week. He looks very much like Peter Bainham, last week's guest. I sent a picture of... I talked about this last week with Peter Bainham, and I sent a picture of Jean Valjean to Peter Bainham. He went, "Oh my God, that's very complimentary." There's just something in the cheeky look he gives when he's about to bum a woman that reminds me of... Anyway, he calls it... because he's French. He isn't the real Jean Valjean. It's not his real name. I'm going to do a very quick bit of stand-up for the show, because I think it's going to take a little time, but also my guest wasn't in the wings when I started, so I'm just going to give them some time to get here. Oh, I should say to everyone here in the room, Maria Bamford's going to be the guest next week, so please do buy tickets for that. It's going to be awesome. The stuff that's happened this week, I was lying in bed after last week's podcast, and my wife does the morning after, usually with the kids, and I heard my daughter saying to my wife, "Daddy eats wee wee and poo poo." That's what. I can't believe she would say that. I told her that in confidence. That is very upsetting, and she's really got into doing saying wee wee and poo poo, which is great because I spent like 8 years of my life. Between the ages of 28 and 36. And all I said was wee wee poo poo bottom the whole time. So I'm really proud. My wife thinks I'm encouraging my daughter, but I'm not. I'm going, "Oh, don't do that. It's very naughty." And then we laugh together. I'm telling her off. This week is being recorded just after International Women's Day, which went quite well. As you know, I do track men down on the internet. I won't go into in great detail, but I don't remember much about it. It's a very wearing day for me when I'm just telling men that there is an International Men's Day and it's November the 19th. My favourite one of the day was, though, some American gentleman typed, "When's International Men's Day?" And I don't mean in a homo type of way.
And I replied, November the 19th, don't alienate the gays or you'll never get your dick sucked. So that is my... that was my favourite of the day. So, any sign? Okay. Is he, are they aware they've got to come on? Do you want to just... Is he... He's aware that we'll be talking out here. Is he? Right. So my guest this week... He's having a great chat in the dressing room. I think he's on his own. He's probably best known as Brod in Survivors. That was a great show. Will you please welcome... It's Brian Blessed, ladies and gentlemen! 180 episodes! You can sit here if you can put. I'm not sure you'll need a microphone, but we've got one anyway. Just for the people at home.
What the fuck are you all doing here? Is this, am I on?
Yes, I think so.
Hello! Can you hear me? I've only got one thing to say to you. Gordon's alive!
And if only,
I have
if only
to
that
say,
were the case.
I am fucking amazed you're all here.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you all doing here? Well, I'm marvellous to be here. You can speak now.
They've come to see you, Brian. I've been trying to get you on this podcast for a very long time. It's been very difficult to get you. I've had Hollywood superstars. I've had all sorts of people on here, but Brian Blessed is the one everyone wants. I can stop doing the podcast after this one.
In actual fact, I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, I am huge in Tenerife. When I first went to Everest, is my daughter out there?
Yes,
she is. It's so difficult to lie when you know your daughter's out there. Yeah. I hate admitting I'm gay. Anyway, look at it. I'll shag anything that moves. Anyway, look. I have never fucking won anything except years ago in Tenerife. The BBC phoned me up and said, because I'd been up, climbed Everest, and followed Mallory's route up Everest, dressed like this. Anyway, the film came out called Galahad of Everest in 1990. And the BBC phoned up and said, Brian, you've won Best Actor at the Tenerife Film Festival. I said, what for? They said, for Galahad of Everest. I said, but I don't act in it. I climb a fucking mountain. Anyway, I went along to Tenerife, and there was Kevin over here, my Robin Hood, Kevin...
Kevin Costner?
Yeah, very good. And he's not as dumb as he looks. So there was Kevin Costner here and Daniel J. Lewis for Dancing with Wolves, and I was in the middle. I accepted it, and it was, they gave it to me. I said, thank you very much, it's my best performance ever. I mean, how the fuck could I lose 7 stone, which I do in the film by acting? I fucking, anyway, I accepted the award, and so, and it was a big bone on a piece of rock. And I took it home, and my fucking Jack Russell ate it. Ask me any question you like. Go on.
Well, I have one question I ask a lot of guests.
What's that?
I think if this question may finally be about to pay off. Have you ever seen a Bigfoot, Brian Blessed?
Well, I can answer that question.
Yes.
No. I'll be very serious now, because I can sit with this audience, I can be wonderfully serious and full of gravitas. What was the question?
Have you ever seen a Yeti or a Bigfoot or a Yeti?
Now, look, ladies and gentlemen, a third of Canada has only been surveyed by helicopter. a lot of the Lost World in South America is completely unknown. So in Canada, it's Bigfoot Sasquatch, and then you move across from Canada into Asia, and it's the Almas Giant. The Russians have records of the Almas Giant, 7, 8, 9 feet tall. You move across Asia, it becomes the Metoma, and it becomes the Yeti, and then you move down to Sumatra, and it's Orang Pendek. Upright man. And there is a BBC camera crew down there at this moment. They've been there for 10 years taking photographs because they are besotted with it. But you see, I don't need that in the fact that I look in the mirror and I think, I fucking adore the way I look. I mean, people like Branner and Anthony Scher and Derek Jacobi and McKellen and all of them, they're shite compared to me. I fucking look. I have never met a man with such sexual drive when I look in the mirror of such fucking amazing talent. I'm fucking unrivaled. So I look in the mirror and I thought, that is a fucking lovely Yeti. I love my face. I love it that I look like a gorilla. And so, now, hold on a minute. To answer your question, I have, it's in my book, but over the years, I've worked with gorillas. And they love me. And I wrestled a gorilla in Canterbury many, many years ago. Many, many, but bear with me, I'll be with you in a second.
Sorry,
a few years ago in Canterbury, I wrestled Gurgis. He was 6'3", a big, lovely gorilla. I used to wrestle him. I was very glad in the last King Kong film, but one, the blonde girl doing somersaults and King Kong laughing, because gorillas laugh. And when I used to wrestle Gurgis, I used to grab his bollocks. Absolutely true. And it made him helpless. Anyway, what I want to say is this, because I'm fed up with all this sex stuff. I have had females come on at me. Now, these working with female gorillas that I did in Canterbury and at Chessington at the time, there's about six of them. I sat with the gorillas because they love me, and they're very passive, the females, but they are dirty fuckers. And they empty your pockets. You must empty your... going there, they empty your pockets. They'll empty your pockets. They're very quick. And they're very passive. And then gradually their hands start to move towards your flies. And they start to unzip. And it's a universal language. And then it's a knock on the nose. And then their hands come out again and they start heading for your cock again. And you stop them like that, because they are absolutely oversexed. Now, you're seeing it with me.
Only with you or with us?
But the thing is, and I please, I'm talking. It is. I can't get a fucking word in edgeway. Interviewing me out of my fucking skull. So, anyway, what the fuck am I? Anyway, I'm with a gorilla. Now, the thing is, I put an apology in one of my chapters in my book, and I apologise to the male gorilla, because, I mean, they're all about 35 stone, with immense shoulders, and huge, but their cocks are that big. They're like little lipsticks. Now, I mean, Jasmine Morris mentioned this, the human penis, sorry, girls, the men usually, they're about that long or that long. I have no one that long. And they do get some fucking jaffers, some fucking huge fucking penises. So the human male, in spite of his great brain he's got, I mean, he dangles down there. They've got, human beings, males, they have pretty big dongs. So anyway,
speak for yourself.
I'll just scratch for a moment. So I would say that. Therefore, I don't understand why the gorillas are that big, and you can understand why the females adore me, can't you? And that's my point. Does that answer?
It's good.
Does that answer your question?
I'm not sure.
I presume that the male gorillas have a fucking fantastic sperm count.
I think it's to do with gorillas are very faithful, so the testicle size and penis size is small. It's something to do with that, whereas I think human beings are... I did write a book about penises.
Did you?
Yeah, I can't quite remember what it is. I think that's right. I think gorillas are more faithful, so their genitals can be smaller. It's something like that, but I think it's about balls rather than penis size. But
fuck,
we'll see.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Doesn't sound like they are from your experience.
Anyway, I don't know. But anyway, certainly the Yeti does exist. I'm quite convinced. Yeah. I'm quite convinced.
You went to search. You went. Because there's another question I ask is, have you ever been in a canoe? But I've never asked, have you been in a canoe that's been paddled by an orangutan?
I said, Guinness. I when I was down there in Malaysia, I was in this canoe with this fucking great orangutan. You know, I've got these great fucking lips. And with an orangutan down there, and he was rowing us in the fucking canoe. And I'm saying, is this the right way? Kissing me on the fucking lips. And I was in this canoe being canoe-bite. Is that the answer to your question?
Yeah, well, it is a good answer. It's a good answer to that question, have you ever been in a canoe?
And they're dirty fuckers as well. They'll fuck anything that moves. Now, the orangutan has a reasonable... Yeah, fuck it. They do have pretty good cocks. Is Attenborough out there? He knows all about animals.
Is your book mainly about the cocks of animals that you've seen?
There are moments in it, yes.
The panther in my kitchen. We'll mention
the panther
book
in my kitchen. Yes, yes.
How was the panther's cock?
A panther what?
How was the panther's cock?
Oh, rather large. A big yellow one. You know. Yes, yeah. Yes. I don't think the sperm's yellow, but I think it's kind of blue colour.
Yeah.
But again, but to know that...
You think the sperm's... Yes.
But ask me another question.
I will do. Well, someone has answered the Bigfoot question by saying that they've seen your foot, and your foot's quite a Bigfoot, because you've got a... Did you have an accident with your foot where your foot's flat? Is that right?
Where do you get this information?
Well, I don't know.
This is incredibly embarrassing. You see...
I think Marcus Brigstock said he'd seen your foot.
And he's a total prick.
That is by the by.
I'll chin the bastard. No. What we're talking about... When I was a little boy, and I was a lovely boy, in Yorkshire, son of a coal miner, and every week I'd go and see Flash Gordon. In black and white, in the cinema nearby, 7 years, 8 years of age. And we did Dusties, which means daring. And, of course, when I saw Flash Gordon, I always... We then represented the characters, and I always became Voltan. I got wings like Voltan. I never dreamt that one day I'd actually play Voltan. And we'd jump off bridges, you know, where the Flying Scotsman were, and I jumped far too high of a bridge, and I had damaged my right foot, and it's always been shit ever since, you know. But it's a good weapon in judo, and... And it's got me on Mount Everest. But that's why my foot is like it is. I want to say while we're on Flash Gordon, ladies and gentlemen... what the f... Is this a cock? No.
Okay. Let's not go over.
I want to say that in Flash Gordon... eventually, of course, I did the film. And I think it's a wonderful film, because it's a comic strip. It's got wonderful style, a lovely cast in it and everything else. And there's that marvellous moment when we invade Rocket Ship Ajax... Absolutely amazing. And it took ages that day to get the dynamite ready for days and get the special effects ready, get the dwarfs ready, the fucking monsters ready. And, of course, when you see films of Superman, there's only two men flying or three men flying. In Batman, one man, two men, nothing. But in Flash Gordon, our film, you've got 4,500 people flying. It's amazing with their wings and me at the front. So it took ages to get it ready, get our wings together. I did have, of course, an extra wing wire. I had an extra wire on my cock to hold me up, because I'm being rather heavy down there. I had all the fucking lines. When I'm flying up there, you could end up with a falsetto voice. Hello! I didn't want. So I had an extra one on my bollocks. Anyway. That sequence of me flying down, you know, everyone's getting ready. Then they gave me a bazooka. And, of course, he's made of cardboard. You know, and he's given me the bazooka and flashes alongside me. Of course, the terms I use are my RAF squadron when I was doing my national service. And there it is. So, stand by, Brian! Action! And I went, oh, well, who wants to live forever? Squadron 40, dive! And down we came. One for you. And they said, cut, cut, cut! Brian, we put in the special effects. I have never felt such a cunt in all my life.
Very good.
I mean, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. There's a lot to get through, Brian. There's a lot of things to talk about. I want to talk to you about you delivering a baby on a heath somewhere.
There's no end to my talents.
In the 1960s, you delivered a baby.
My lungs fill up with air too many. I've got such big lungs. They fill up. I'm just belching for it.
It's okay.
How much better? No, what was the question?
About you delivering a baby?
When I lived in Richmond, I went into Richmond Park. I was doing Fancy Smith in Z cars. Oh, I was in Z cars between 1962 and 65. I was Fancy Smith, the tough guy. I mean, everyone adored me, Jesus. I got 28,000 letters a week. We had an audience of 35 million. It's amazing, the women loved God. I was so fucking sexy. Jesus, that's Fancy Smith. The birds were crazy about me. I love myself. As I said, I look in the mirror and I fucking love myself. You know. Anyway, I digress. I was in... At this time in 1962, 63, 63, I went in Richmond Park and there was a woman in distress. Oh, help me, help me, help me. And I raced across, no bugger around, of course. And she was having a baby. Well, of course, I'm a war baby myself. We were brought up in Probert Avenue in Goldthorpe, Yorkshire. And we helped the doctors because we had very few nurses. It wasn't like the midwives and all that. And we helped deliver babies as a little boy. You help spread the legs and all this and that. So I spread her legs, got her pants off, got her underwear off, and the head was coming out. I got her to breathe deeply, and I pulled out the baby slowly. I took my shirt off and put the baby in the shirt and calmed her down. And then I bit the afterbirth off and tied it in a knot. And then I pressed her belly to get rid of the clots. I knew about all these things. Calmed her down, and then I shouted, "Emily!" Shout because the fucking shout could have killed her. But... Eventually they got an ambulance and they put her in... It's an Italian girl. And I put her in the ambulance and I delivered the baby and off she went. And I've never heard from her since.
Is that true?
Absolutely. It is. I don't know why my life is full of all these things, but it always seems to happen to me.
Well, you've had incredible things happen. You met Pablo Picasso. Do you remember meeting Pablo Picasso?
Yes, it's a long story, ladies and gentlemen.
It's not that long a story. It's an insane story.
Look, it's a story. I'm the son of a coal miner in Goldthorpe. I was born in Mexborough, lived in Goldthorpe, Probert Avenue, Flying Scotsman and all that. And I was a war baby. We had two pilots in our house, two Polish pilots who shot down Messerschmitts at Finningley Airport. They went to... It was so exciting. And when the war ended, there was a great celebration in Woodsborough Park near Sheffield. 350,000 people. And there was Zhukov there, the great Russian general, and Patton, the great American general, all got together. No more war! You kind of believe that we got where we are at the moment, can you? Now a bit warmongering going on in the world. There's going to be no more wars. We'd won the war. There's great celebrations. No, no more, no war, no more, no more, no more. They're all singing that. It was the park. And at the town centre, they had Paul Robeson. Paul Robeson was the great black, wonderful bass baritone. He was in Sanders of the River. He sang the famous canoe song. Are you poor? Are you poor? Are you good? Are you poor? Are you good? And he held at the town hall 4,000 or 5,000 people, speechless. And he had a great emotional content in the fact that I always feel, I try to do it when I was in King Lear. He seemed to have emotions upon emotions upon emotions. And my people, your people, and he had a kind of rasping, wonderful, boundless kind of wave of waves of emotion when he spoke. And my people, your people, and peace. And he embraced, all the Russians, embraced the Americans. It was wonderful. And then right up there was Picasso. You know, I'd rushed backstage because I'd got all Paul Robeson's letters, records, and I went into his little dressing room, and there I was because, you know, I was always adventurous, and I was just, you know, just at 9 years of age. Excuse me, with a great Yorkshire accent, Mr. Robeson, you didn't sing "I Still Suits Me." And he said, "Well, young man, that's a duet with my wife." Do you know it? I said, "Well, yes, I do." So I sang it with him, you know. "Does you ever wash the dishes? Does you do the things I wishes? Do you do them? No, you won't. Will you do them? No, you won't. When it's raining, who's the fella? Takes up the whole umbrella." And he replied, "No matter what you say, I still suits me." I said, "Well, of course you do, of course you do." And he held me, Paul Robeson. And then they said, "Picasso is up there painting." And I went up there, got in front of everybody, and there was Picasso alongside. I said, and he was talking away to different people like this. I said, "Are you Picasso? Are you Picasso?" With all the Yorkshire lads around me. "Yes, I am. I am a Picasso." I said, "You sound more like Carmen Miranda." I said, "You're not Picasso. If you're Picasso, draw me something." And he got his pen and he drew a dove of peace in 10 seconds. And I looked at it and it was shite. I said, "This is not a dove. This is not a dove. It's not a dove. I'll draw you a dove." And he said, "Well, it is the first time that I have a critic. To the child, it means nothing. I'll draw you a dove." And I drew him a dove. And I gave it, he accepted it, and I gave him his back. You can see the dove of peace. When you see it now, of course, to an adult, it's a hand like that, holding a dove. And of course, it's beatific. And I gave it back to him. And my, you know, and it was in the, it's in the gallery in Sheffield. You can see it. The dove, a piece that Brian Blessed turned down. And it's valued at 57 million. My father wouldn't talk to me for a fortnight. Any more questions?
You're right.
That was very embarrassing. I was a fucking...
It was a longer story than I expected. I wasn't expecting the duet in the middle of it.
We've got plenty. We've got plenty of time.
It's good.
You're a very good interviewer. I fancy you myself.
I'm taken, unfortunately, now, Brian. I waited a long time for you, but I'm not. I like this. I don't know. I haven't seen this story in many places. But when you were playing Fancy Smith in Zed Cars, you were in the BBC TV Centre, and as people of my generation will remember the statue of Helios in the centre that Roy Castle tap danced around. You had a story with
yes. It's a bit embarrassing. I was Fancy Smith. We were the creme de la creme. You know, I mean, they loved us so much, the four boys in the car and the inspector and the sergeant. I mean, we were just massive. We could do anything. It was wonderful. There was only BBC One and ITV. That's all they were at the time. So I couldn't walk any. I was bigger than the Beatles. But I was this... And everybody wanted to be in Zed Cars. I mean, you know, from Laurence Olivier to James Mason, Kenneth Moore, Peter O'Toole, and all of them, they all wanted to be in Zed Cars. And Wendy Hiller, I did a two-hander with her virtually in Zed Cars. Absolutely very marvellous. But anyway, we'd play cricket with the Director General upstairs on the fourth floor, as you see it now. And in the middle was Helios, this great kind of pole, kind of cenotaph thing. And at the top was Helios, all naked and bronze, lovely, and so forth. Very, very high indeed above a fountain. And I mean, so the Director General and Hugh Weldon and all of them, Hugh Carton Green said, "Brian, you're a mountaineer, you climb mountains, you've climbed the Matterhorn and Mont Blanc. We want you to climb Helios. And this is 12 o'clock at night, and they're all pissed. The director... What? I went there, and they turned the fountain off, and I got on, I shimmied up. I got to the top, and then Hugh Weldon shouted, well done, blessed, now take it out. And I took out this wrench letter, this condom... And I blew it up into a balloon with the end where the sperm goes in, as you know. And then I tied it onto the cock of Helios. And said, well done, blessed, said the Director General, well done. Now, I hope people look at the bloody thing. Because she was very proud of it. And then I came down and they turned the fucking fountain on and fucking drenched me. But you couldn't do that today.
Because all the yuppies who live there will be furious. That's why.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
I met you once before, Brian, and in the 1990s, I'd say, at a party. I might have been the early 2000s.
Yeah.
You told me you were... training to go to Mars, not for a TV show, that you were going to go to Mars. Have you been to Mars yet?
Look, I have the piss taken out of me. I'm fucking fed up with it.
That's what you told me. I said no, for a TV show.
Look,
I said, no, I'm going to Mars. I'm training.
No,
you've been training.
I'll answer the question. I won't shirk it. I won't fucking shirk it. Incredibly phallic, isn't it? Like a Dalek's cock. Anyway, what was the question here?
Have you been to Mars, or are you going to Mars?
I, it was very funny. Years ago, Kenneth Branagh and I don't know many actors. We have a father-son relationship, Ken and I. Are you in the audience, Ken? Well, bollocks, it doesn't matter. Anyway, we have a father-son relationship. I'm the son, he's the father. He's an old cunt compared to me. And so I listen to all his ambitions, and he sits in my hut, and he looks at me, and I think I'm the only person who completely surprise and shock him at the time. And he then, when he's finished talking, he says, what are you doing next? I said, well, I'm going to Mars. Yes. It's a little red dot in the sky. I said, well, no, I'm going to assimilate. Okay. You see, my biggest love in life is space. And as you're sitting here now, people say, well, you'd never get me, Brian, going into space. You'd never get me in a rocket ship. But you've got no choice. You're traveling at 57,000 miles per second as you sit here. And so it's a solar system, and so it's a Milky Way. So every time you wake up, you're in a different part of the universe. You're space travelers, and we're young. We are the children of stardust, yearning for the stars. It's in us. We're only beginning There's so much out there. It's amazing that you can get your laptops and press them, and then you can see all the continents on Titan. And you can see and all the other moons on Titan. You know, it was astonishing that that we can now see all these continents on these moons and on these planets. There are mountains on Mars four times higher than Mount Everest, Olympus Mons, the size of Spain. I want to go there. I want to climb it. I want to be there. At the age of six, I was told by our infant teacher, Mrs. Gummersall, that there were other worlds besides ours. I thought they were painted, the stars. No, 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 they're real. And Mars, I painted Mars when I was 6 years of age, all red. I wanted to go there. So I saw things like Flash Gordon, and I saw things like Angry Red Planet, you know, The Man from Planet X, Journey into Space. I yearned and yearned and yearned. And I said to NASA and the Interplanetary Society the other day, I was heartbroken at seven because I couldn't go there, and I'm still heartbroken. Get off your fucking arses! And they were shocked and proprietary, but they love me because of my passion, because of my love. Because, I mean, Golombek, the head of NASA, and he sounds like Kermit, you know. He's one of the great brains in the world. Right, it's wonderful. Mars is wonderful. It's wonderful. you can just grab the surface, Brian. It's all history. It's wonderful. That is one of the greatest fucking brains in the fucking world. And Zubrin, who's doing Mars Direct. He's building sheds and things on Devon Island in the Arctic and training people for Mars. And I'm part of the Martian program. I inspire them. I wore Martian prototype suits, 27 million quid each. So I said to Ken, I'm going to get four or five Mountaineers, the best in the world. I'm going to get NASA on board. I'm going to get the Russians on board, the Chinese on board, macrobiologists, geologists, the lot. And we'll go, we'll film in Russia, we'll train in Russia. I'll be trained completely as a cosmonaut, total training. And I'll do the same. I said, and we'll go to Reunion Island in the Pacific. And we did, massive tents, helicopters. I write my own scripts. What I want to do, I will not be restricted. And we got there, and these suits that are made are being made by the man who designed Predator. Yeah, here's Kevin Hall, who is the Predator, 7'4". And he was there. It was lovely. And they fitted these suits on. And we're wearing Martian prototype suits and training where this volcano is on Reunion Island. It's called Terra. And it erupts a lot. And it's a plate volcano like you'll find on Mars. And we trained on there. And I was with Catherine d'Estavelle, the great woman climber who climbs in France, you know, Yosemite, alone without a rope. And she's climbing with me. And she's with me. And we go, you know, and I'm with all these microbiologists and biologists, and I'm wearing, and there I am. And you wear these suits, and they're very tight, almost as tight as this, and the, like, veins they have inside, and that, so you don't have to shit, and you don't have to pee. It takes it out of your body. It's amazing. So I'm training with them all, and then one day I said, when we climbed a few cliffs, I said to Golombek, I said, Golombek, I said, we're running out of oxygen. No, the oxygen cylinders are that big. And they go in there, and they go in there, and they go in there. They're very refined. So I said, you know, they're emptying. Well, Brian, I said, where's the oxygen? We're in our helmets and all that, about 15 of us. And he says, use your compass, Brian. I said, I can't use a compass. You're a mountaineer, been to Everest and all this. And you can't use a compass? I said, no. I said, but you have to understand, of course I can't use a compass. There are no magnetic fields on Mars. and Gollenbeck and Zubrin and the whole of NASA said, God fucking damn it! We've got a fucking guy here, we've got the best fucking brains, we've got NASA here, and we've got this cunt telling us that there isn't a magnetic field on fucking Mars. Why didn't some fucker think of that? That's why they love me. I point out simple things to them. And so, I mean, so it was just, my relationship with NASA is wonderful. They're lovely, wonderful people. You, for Christ's sake. In the 50s and 60s, we had Blue Streak, Black Knight and Black Arrow. It was a now, I'm not criticising the Labour Party. It just happened to be a Labour Party who cancelled it all. We were training at the Woomera Rocket Range in the 1950s. We led the, we were ahead of Wernher von Braun. We'd have been on Mars. We cancelled it. The European rocket Ariadne, that's Blue Streak. Ah, look here, youngsters. I can see what they're of all ages. You know, my religion is young people. And Christ. We have brilliant young scientists all over the country, and they're out of fucking work. I used to talk to Pillinger before he died about this. It's tragic. But at last, I am working in Abingdon with Skylon, developing space planes for the moon and Mars, and we're coming back. We're coming back. And I'm part of that program. And it's incredibly exciting. And so we're going to get out there. Another thing I want to say is... hello. Another one to think, there's something that makes me fucking angry. And that's all this middle-aged crap. I'm sick of age. I'm sick of all this age thing. I mean, 40 is very young, it's not middle-aged. I think middle-aged is between 55 and 65. But it's not how old you are, it's how you are old. I mean, Christ, we're nothing now. With the pills we're going to get, and with the vitamins we're going to get, we can go on and on and on. I also, when I'm on Everest and all these other mountains and things and dangerous things I've done, I do not believe in death. Death, right up your ass. As the great poet John Donne said, death, thou shalt die. You've always been alive. Darling, you're a young woman, young man, young woman, young. I mean, say you've been alive 25 years, whatever your age is. You know, you've been alive 25 years, but when were you dead? You've never been dead. You've always been alive. You haven't arrived at what you are now in 25 years. It's taken eons. Exploration. I find now in astronomy, mountaineering, all the other sciences, what can I say, is that exploration is not a discovery. Zubrin's talking about it at the moment. He's sending me a treatise on it. It is a remembrance. A discovery is limited. Remembering, as T.S. Eliot says, we shall not cease from exploration, and the end of our exploring will be to arrive at the place where we started and know it for the first time. So it's all there, it's out there, and we're going to make it. I'll stop for the moment.
We're still going. I'll ask you this question then. Have you ever seen a ghost, Brian Bless?
I've had strange experiences in this rediscovery.
Yeah, me too.
I better stand up. in my varied and wonderful life, and I've always been very modest, I've met remarkable... You know, I've always been helped. I'd say for son of a coal miner in a C-class, at secondary school, Patrick Stewart and I. Patrick Stewart of Jean-Luc Picard's Star Trek. He was bald when he was 12. And, don't worry, Patrick, you'll be all right, you'll be all right. And then I realised the whole family were fucking bald. So. Anyway. But Patrick would follow me everywhere. I'm always 2 or 3 years older than Patrick. And I took him everywhere. We went on drama courses, we went here, there, and everywhere. He was the son of a milkman, and I was the son of a coal hewer, the hardest work in a coal mine, 18 tons. And the weekend, my dad, who was heroic to me, played for Yorkshire, opening fast bowler. Amazing. It was absolutely kind of adorable. But anyway, what were we going to say? I've waylaid myself. Patrick, I mean... Anyway, we had nothing. We had no qualifications. And Patrick and I loved the amateur theatre. We went on summer drama courses in Yorkshire, in the Calder Valley. Magical valley, magical place, magical professional teachers. We never dreamt of being professional teachers. We're 11 and 12 and 13 years of age. And we come back from that, and then our teachers... You see, we all need help. You do so much on your own, you can do so much, but then you need teachers, you need people to help you. People of taste and knowledge, we all need help. We're a team. And anyway, Patrick and I remember we went to Sheffield, to the Lyceum. And we'd never seen a professional actor. And we had heard of Donald Wolfert. Now, I don't want to bore the arse off you. Who is Donald Wolfert? Wolfert was my physique. He was kind of broader than he was long. And he was the greatest King Lear of all time. Because I played Lear recently. And he was a great King Lear. And Harold Pinter said he took up acting and took up writing and everything because he saw Wolfert as King Lear. And we got there and we saw, Patrick and I saw his King Lear, which... You know, it mesmerised me, what he did. Of course, he's a tremendous big head. And that week, he'd done Shylock and Iago and Othello and Richard III, Richard II. You name it, he'd done it. And he was holding on to the curtain in front of Patrick and I. We were mesmerised, and he said, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Next week, I shall be presenting... my Hamlet. And my good wife will be playing Ophelia. And a man from the back said, your wife's a bloody whore! And Wolfert replied, nevertheless, you couldn't face Wolfert. Now... I'll give you one more story about all this. I have always taken the piss out of great actors. I love it. As a National Theatre, which is a bit like fucking Colditz, they couldn't persuade me to stay there. And I was playing Gorky in State of Revolution. And I was at Littleton, walking up and down the corridors with 50 kind of Russian sailors, actors playing the part. And next door, the Olivier, was Sir John Gielgud. Now, all you youngsters don't know, you've heard about Wolfert. And Gielgud had a lovely voice. Marvellous, lovely voice. The great Sir John. Oh, Sir John Gielgud. And he was on at the Littleton in Volpone, and he got feathers on his head, looked very lovely. And he used to pass me in the corridor, and I used to grab his ass. Give me your ass, come here, Sir John. Come, I'll grab your ass. Come on, great actor. Oh, do you leave me alone, Brian? Leave me alone. Brian, leave me alone. Stop it. So Peter Hall said to me, Brian, you know, we all love you, Brian, we do love you, but you're terrifying, Sir John. He says you bruised his buttocks. So I left, I took a rest, I didn't bother. He came into his dressing room one night, you know, and he opened up his cupboard, and I was inside it. He said to people later on, he said to Michael Bryant, you know that Brian Blessed is a terrible man, but he's a lovely bit of rough. I'll do one more theatrical story of a giant... At the Royal Shakespeare Company, there was a director there called Robert Atkins. All actors, when they feign Victorian acting, do Robert Atkins, a little bit of that. Oh, dear, a little bit of really cod, hammy acting. And he begat Regent's Park. And he was 10 years at the Royal Shakespeare Company putting on marvellous productions. Robert Atkins, My Physique Again. And anyway, the bastards, because they are fucking shits at times. Anyway, imagine. They said to him, you know, you've done very well here, but we want some new blood in, some new minds. And therefore, we have to give you your notice in 3 weeks' time. Terribly sharp, the whole thing is well known. It's just that on the last night, we'd love you to make a speech, if that's all right. At the time, I have to mention that the Royal Shakespeare Company was sponsored by Flowers Ale. So, would you make a speech? He said, of course I will, on the last night. I'll make a speech. And on the last night, the curtain came down, and then it went up, and he stepped forward and said, I've only got one thing to say. Flowers Ale is piss. And that was his curtain speech. At the time. I think. Did you say something? Anyway, I have to say that when I went, the miracle happened for Patrick and me. We were in the amateur theatre, I drew my national service, and then Patrick and I applied for a scholarship. I mean, we could only fill in the date and our signatures, because we had no qualifications, no certificates at all of qualification, educational certificates, nothing. And they said, don't mind, lads, you both can act. We're giving you a scholarship, because this working-class boys, it was a miracle. And we're going to go to the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School, because we wanted to go there because we knew the teachers there. And so you had the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School, you had the Downs, you had Suspension Bridge, you had the university for the academic side, and the Bristol Old Vic Company with people like Peter O'Toole and Schofield appearing in the company. I arrived there, oh, so excited. And you weren't allowed to mix with the Bristol Old Vic Theatre Company. They were brilliant. O'Toole's Hamlet was his best performance ever. Oh, black hair. Black beard he had then, big nose. Oh, he did all kinds of things. He'd jump off the stage and sit with the audience and say, are you enjoying it? This next bit's lovely. He was so wonderful, outrageous. But we couldn't mix. I ran at the university, I was doing House of Regrets, playing an old admiral. And when it was finished, Peter O'Toole rushed backstage and said, hello, he said. It's Brian, isn't it? It's Brian Blessed. Yes, I'm Peter. I'm Peter O'Toole. I've watched you. You know, you always start from strength. I start from fragility. But tonight you were fragile. It was wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. National service? Yes, parachute regiment. I was in the Navy. The Paras were bastards, weren't they? I said, no, we weren't. Ah, I don't like parachutists. I was Yorkshire schoolboy boxing champion. They almost persuaded me to be trained to be a British light heavyweight. ABA, you want it now? What do you want? What do you want? What do you want, O'Toole? No, that's all right. It's all right. So we became contentious, and all the time we competed. And one time, Peter and I, we ran all the way from Lee Woods across the suspension bridge into Clifton at 3 o'clock in the morning. And there were two professors, Professor Josephs and Professor Murray. And they'd been to see Sir John Gielgud in The Seven Ages of Man. And they were crying their eyes out. Oh, he was wonderful. He has such a phenomenal grasp of the verse. You two boys, you must go and see him. You must go and see him. And they were crying their eyes out. And then they walked away. And O'Toole looked at me and said, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, they're so enamoured with Sir John Gielgud, they fail to realise that you and I are both bollock naked. What was the question?
So you can answer. You can ask the question.
I must say, just something for a second. Just for a second, and you're being very understanding.
No, it's very enjoyable.
I want to say this for now, that, of course, 50% of my life is exploration, 50% acting, and so forth. Richard Bryars said to me, Brian, you never praise actors. You praise explorers and Mallory and Scott and Shackleton, but you never say these days a good word about us. So I'd like to say categorically now, as you can hear me, Richard, that I think that acting, bear with me on this, is the hardest of all arts. I say this because I've been trained operatically, and you can say, if you're singing, oh, I've got a bit of a bad throat, a bit stiff. In ballet, you can say, well, I've got a bit of a ligament problem. I'm a bit stiff tonight. But in acting, your body, your face, your eyes, your nose, your voice, your imagination, your heart, your soul, 90% of the time is shot down, and you've got to have the courage to continue. And that is immense courage that you have to apply. But, as Hamlet says, acting is holding up the mirror up to nature, up to life. But, of course, climbing Mount Everest is life. And I found there is a big difference. But I love both. Leading on to Everest just for a short bit, I went there 3 times, broke all kinds of records. We made Galahad of Everest, won that lovely award I told you about. I went there 3 times, broke all the world records, old age, 28,600 feet without oxygen, as there is no end to my talents. And so I fulfilled those wonderful dreams. I've been to the North Pole, I've been to the Lost World, I've been in Mongolia, climbed a mountain there with a wolf. Because they have wolves and they don't have dogs. Yes, it's fucking true. Where the fuck was I? Yes. Anyway, so I'm sure about Everest. Anyway, I was on not the 9 o'clock news, and I thought, because actors have got to be actors. You know, when I'm Galahad of Everest, I suddenly was on a camera and I had to be me. I couldn't act. And I got to like me. I got to love me. You know, so I got to know who I really was. And when it comes to climbing mountains, everybody wants to know about toilets. And I was on the programme. The Queen saw it as well. She washed it after the watershed, whatever it is, and so forth. And we were on the southern side of Everest. We had a pretty rough time in the monsoon conditions. And we got up to 26,000 feet. Now, at that, from you have a change at 5,000 feet, a change at 10, a change at 15, the height of Mont Blanc. At 22,000 feet, you have 14 days to live and you die. Dive like a atmospheric pressure, gamma rays, cosmic rays. At 25,000 feet, you've got 4 days to live and you die for the same reason. Lack of atmospheric pressure, etc. At 28,000 feet, you've got 1 day. We were at 26,000 feet. There's me, David Empleman Adams, Graham Hoyland, and Dogie. And four of us on the Lhotse face. There's Lhotse, and there's Everest. They're joined. It's a 4-mile drop. Tear you to pieces if you fall down there. 387 dead bodies down there. Tear you to pieces. And four of us in a 2-man tent. And I'm the only fucker whose brain's working, because it doesn't bother my brain. You can see I'm sane, can't you? It didn't. It doesn't bother my brain. And we're in the fucking tent. And suddenly, and there's a storm going on. We're going to go for the summit in 2 hours' time. There's a storm going on, and suddenly, Empleman Adam, because you see, you talk to Bonington and all these people, and they're asked about toilets on Everest, and they say, well, we had our private dunny. We behaved very well. We took our paper and things like that. Absolute bollocks. Mountaineers are dirty, filthy bastards. There's an old saying, mountaineers have furry ears and pee through leather breeches. They wipe their arse on broken glass, those hardy sons of bitches. They're dirty fuckers. I have to say, if you do go to Everest, always make sure you camp above the French. Toast at 2 o'clock, fucking hell! Pull your pants on, you dirty fuckers. Anyway. At 26,000 feet, there we are. And suddenly Hemelman Adams says, I've got to have a shit. I said, you can't have a shit. You can't have a fucking shit. You can't move. None of you can. Would you listen to me? And the wind's blowing. And we've got two carabiners holding the bloody tent. Four of us in a 2-man tent. I said, shit yourself. Just shit yourself. It'll be sawdust in about 2 hours' time, because it does at altitude. Your shit goes to powder. Oh, my God, I'm a gentleman. Oh, Christ, Christ. Does she get hold of him? We got his body across, slowly got him across. Get him across. Pass me across. Fuck it. Oh, careful, the fucking tent's coming down. Unzip, snow coming in. There's a rope out there. Time off, time off. Tie off. Think of your mother, think of your children, think of your wife. You can't. He goes out there and has a shit. Eventually, he comes back, we unzip, there's snow pouring in. Come here. Easy, 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 easy. Easy, easy, easy. Easy. We get him in the corner. So I said, well, look, we might as well have a brew. We're going to go for the summit in 2 hours' time. And then after a while, Graham Hoyland said, there's a terrible smell of shit. And I turned round, and there was a turd on Empleman Adam's shoulder. What had happened was, he'd had a shit, and the turd had gone up in the air, and there was a lull in the wind, and it landed on his shoulder. And that is the glamour of Mount Everest.
So you haven't seen a ghost then?
Am I being fucking upstaged?
You give me a bit of time.
The ghost, I'll just quickly say the ghost. When I train with these wonderful teachers in Hoyland and the Yorkshire Vales. No. I did meet a ghost. I won't talk about it. No, fuck it. There we go. Okay, do you want another question?
We'll end in a second. Sit down.
Sit down, yes.
Sit down. So you're on tour. Alicia mentioned you're on tour. I've seen you in the same theatres as me. You've got your book out, which we must mention again, Brian Blessed the Panther in My Kitchen.
It's fantastic.
It is. Lots of... You used to work as a plasterer, is that right?
Yes, a plasterer. You can always tell a plasterer. They have very supple wrists. I can mix that way, mix that way. So when I was in The Three Musketeers, because I believe all actors should wear defence well, I did épée, sword and sabre in the RAF and at drama school and won the Gloucester Foil Championship. So I've always fenced. I did The Three Musketeers, as Porthos, after Fancy Smith. It was a big change, being flamboyant as Porthos. Very, very flamboyant with a moustache and all that. And Jeremy Brett was a wonderful D'Artagnan. And so the BBC looked after me. I said, we need help. They put me in The Three Musketeers. They put me in I, Claudius, and all that kind of thing.
That was one of the first things I remember, one of the first programs I remember really getting into as a kid. And you're Caesar Augustus in that.
Yes.
You know, it was awesome. You are, it has to be said, Brian, a fantastic actor. I do want to say that before we end. You're absolutely superb.
They're very kind. They, of course, when we'd done five episodes, suddenly Herbie Wise, I I'd been in, when I was in Zedcars, we had the best writers. We had all the best writers in it. As I said, everybody wanted to be in it. And the greatest director was Herbert Wise, who did direct I, Claudius. Now, Herbie Wise was terrifying, a small man, but Strafford Johns was our inspector and quite a big star and so forth in rehearsals one day, and he was a minute late. And we could dictate anything, we're so popular, but not with Herbie Wise. And Herbie just looked at his watch and said, you're 1 minute late. Do you hear what I just said? Well, I've been doing publicity, said Stratford. You don't ever, ever, ever come to my rehearsals late. And he scared the shit out. Stratford took some doing. Anyway, I have found times, and you may find it too, when I've wanted to say bollocks to everything and go for a walkabout, that I need to be on my own. But I love silence. I love to meditate. And I love silence, to be on my own. And we're rehearsing with Herbie. I got a big... that episode, I had a huge part as Fancy Smith. And I didn't turn up. I wasn't a minute late. I didn't turn up. And Herbie went ballistic. He says, that fucking, that big-headed cunt, that fucking shit, I'll get him sacked and sacked and sacked and sacked. Give me the director general. Give me Norman Rutherford. Give me the head of programs. I'll get that fucker sacked. I'll sack him, I'll sack him, I'll sack him. And I'll get back in, I'll skin the bastard. And they said, please, it's Fancy Smith. I don't think you can. I will. He will never, ever play Fancy Smith again. He's out. I don't like his character. He's too strong. He's too tough. Anyway, I don't like him. Can't stand the man. And they said, well, when Brian comes in, we do promise you won't say a word. What? I'll skin him. Anyway, after about 7 hours, I came in, and there was Herbie, and I just shouted, Herbie, my mother's dead! She's had a heart attack. She's in hospital. I've been up and down the fucking M1. And my dad is in shock. He's in Leeds Infirmary through fucking shock. I've been to Leeds Infirmary, Doncaster Infirmary. They're both fucking dying. And I'm crying my eyes out. And Herbie Wise went... And Frank Winston said to him, we told you you weren't going to say anything. Right. Let's start rehearsals. I'm so sorry, Brian. Anyway, they said to me that, because I'll use a chair for this. They said to me months later, they were doing I, Claudius with all the creme de la creme. And my agent said, Herbie Wise wants you to play Augustus Caesar. What? Herbie Wise? He hates me. He can't stand me. Anyway, he wants to see you. And so anyway, I said, it should be Paul Scofield. It should be Alec Guinness, not me. And I went along and he cast me. He didn't say anything. He had cast me as Augustus Caesar. There was a big press meeting. John Hurt Derek Jacobi, me, Baker, Sean Phillips, Patrick Stewart, everybody was there. And the press said, wonderful casting, but we can't understand why have you cast Brian Blessed as Augustus Caesar? And he said, because no one can shoot shit like he can. And that's exactly, of course, what Augustus does. He talks shite. Like most of our politicians talk shite. And he gets away with things. You know, so he's saying, aren't you looking lovely today? Oh, are you leaving us today? Are you going to the port to go to Greece? Oh, I'll help you on your way and have your fucking throat slit on the... You know, so this can... It worked. It was... Yes, I'm picking on you. You're the fuck... And so it was very mafia. And so, you know, it's extraordinary. But Herbie eventually said to me one day, he said... And they're all sad because they're having a wonderful time and I'm making everybody laugh as Augustus. You're going to die in this one. We're all dreading it, Brian, because you're now 85, 86, and you're dying. I want to see Rome die on your face. Sean has 10 pages of dialogue, but I'm not going to see her. It's just the camera's going to be on your face and you start dead. You die as the camera's on your face. And I want it on your face for 5.5 minutes. I said, Herbie, it can't be done. It can't be done. If you see people in films, when they're dying, you count. It's 3 seconds, 7 seconds, freeze frame. We're not. We're having a curtain blowing behind you, so there's no cheat. 5.5 minutes. I can't just say action. I won't go on for 5 minutes. It's not... And it got headlines in the papers because, of course, in the end, there's no one quite like me. Anyway,
that is very true. That's very true. I think it's everything I ever dreamt that this would be. And there was so much more to talk to you about.
Yes, indeed.
But
what?
What
is it?
He wants you to keep going, I think.
Keep going! I'll tell you what. Of course, I'll tell you... I'll tell you what. Hold it, it's all right. I understand that he has got to get through other people in this. I was going to say is... Branagh's always fascinated because I fear nothing. I don't fear death because death doesn't exist. Fuck off. I fear nothing. I've got mountains and I've got this and I've got that and volcanoes. I have no fear whatsoever. When we made Galahad of Everest, everybody was in the film. Mountaineers of the best order, the Dalai Lama was in it. All these kind of wonderful people were in it. As I followed in Mallory's footsteps. But the BBC said, well, everybody's in it, Bonington, everybody, they're all thrilled to bits, it's going to win everything, which it did. But we want you to meet Reinhold Messner. And I wasn't scared. I felt shy. I said, but it climbed the Eiger North Wall in 3/4 of an hour. I mean, he ran all the way back to the South Pole, Scott's expedition, there and back is a fucking holiday. He's the first man to climb all 14 8,000-metre climbs. Climbs over 26,000 feet without oxygen. The climbing world bowed to a mess. Lived in a castle. Didn't meet anybody. Oh, Christ. I'm a greenhorn. I mean, this is not the ideal figure for going up mountains. You know what I mean, son? No, yes. So it was. They said, Brian, they approached Messner. They explained, they said, an actor. I don't want to meet an actor. I said, well, look, he's a servant to the whole project. You know, it's not about egos. He's telling the story. He's being a servant. 1 minute. I'll give him 1 minute. Oh, shit. So he went to his castle. He has a castle. And there was a castle, and the BBC were all over his garden, and I was really fucking embarrassed, you know. Oh. And then eventually, thank God he wasn't there. And then suddenly a car came up. And this car came up. And this man got out of it in ringlets. He'd just come from the South Pole. And we put drums on it. Vum, vum. Vum, vum. Vum, vum. And it's Mesner. And I shouted, "Rhino's here!" And he turned round, he looked at me, he strode across, he took me by the shoulders, he looked into my face and said, "You can stay all day, you're as fucking mad as I am." Now, I'm just going to say now, to bring it to a conclusion, I'm going to miss you all, and eventually, it happened again a few years ago. Would I be Pavarotti? Because Ace Brian was not frightened of anything. And so Ken Branagh said, "Fucking scared." "Well, I'm not fucking scared." I said, "But when I was in Cats," because I was in Cats, when I was in Cats, I met Placido Domingo and Carreras. And I said, "You call him Maestro, and you kneel to him, and you bow to Pavarotti." And he said, "Yes, I do, because my voice has a lot of fruit in it. I have difficulty with certain projections. Carreras here has a cloudy voice. But Luciano, he is the Maestro. His voice is perfect. It has great clarity and gold." That's why, Ken. Anyway, they offered, not for me, for charity, 100,000, 150,000, 200,000, 250,000, 350,000 quid. You know, for Born Free and other charities for animals and this, that and the other. So I said, yes. I thought, oh, shit. Anyway, on that night, I stepped through the mist. And the makeup was wonderful. I mean, the black on my hair and the padding. And I stepped forward and I looked through the mist. I thought, fucking hell, Pavarotti's here. And then I moved, Christ, it's me. And the audience cheered and cheered and cheered. And then they stopped. And they thought, well, it looks like Pavarotti, but he'll never sound like him. I would need a piano. And I've been shouting a bit. I wouldn't need a piano if I had to. Cielo, chi è bello in me, oh, solo mio, stand from the earth, oh, sole, oh, sole mio.
That wasn't that good. Come on. Thank you very much. There's an interval, and then we're doing a podcast with someone else. See you in a sec.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.